Hi, you are listening to the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. This podcast is for policymakers, governments, researchers, students, businesses, and anyone that is interested in conflict and development issues in Africa. On this podcast, we hear from experts from across Africa and the world. Your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa, will ask the questions you would want answers to. Michael Wangpa has an extensive experience spanning over a decade studying, researching, writing, and consulting on conflict and development issues in Africa.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. I am your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa. Today, we're going to be discussing Mozambique's post-election crisis. We'll be looking at the protests, police brutality, and the struggle for democracy. I'm joined by a very special guest, Dr. David Matsinhi. Dr. Matsinhi is an adjunct professor at the Institute of African Studies of Carleton University in Canada, and also the Director of Research and Policy at Amnesty International, also in Canada. David, you've written extensively on political and social transformations in Mozambique, you know, South Africa and Africa in general. I'm delighted to have you join me, and I look forward to a very exciting conversation between us.
Thank you very much, Michael. I appreciate to be invited to this space. Looking forward to the conversation.
Brilliant. So let's start off. We've seen recently in Africa this year, we've seen a lot of elections. So Mozambique has just had its election on the 9th of October, just about a month ago. But then again, we've seen ongoing post-election conflict with this election. Can you, first of all, take us through the events before the elections and also just give us a snapshot of the election and how it played out that has led us to where we are at this point?
Absolutely. So I would say for the past 3 decades, you know, all these elections have been highly contested. And the results have also been contested. The difference being that, you know, they often were able to find, a compromise or a solution, you know, to keep the country peaceful and continue to run the government and the economy peacefully. Mm-hmm. This time, however, the election was extremely problematic because the government, since the beginning of the process itself, the registration, there was a lot of preparation of what was viewed as, you know, a preparation of fraud. So in fact, fraud, the way it's being described, did not simply happen on the election day, on the day of the election. It happened since the registration process and the accreditation of election monitors, all the way to the election, and there've been tensions and conflict throughout the process. Some people shot and killed, a lot of aggression, you know, violation of rights. However, after the election, with the contestation of the results, mm-hmm. the conflict and tensions intensified with the assassination of two opposition officials, Gwambe and Diaz, who were preparing a dossier or an application to formally contest election with the courts in Mozambique. And that sparked, you know, these widespread, you know, protests throughout the country that we are seeing, and the violent repression that the police is undertaking using war-grade weapons to lethally quell the protests. So another difference is you have a younger generation that have that has a very small, you know, a very reduced threshold of tolerance to misgovernance, you know, to cheating on the elections. So it's these young people who were born way after, you know, the achievement of independence, who don't have this emotional and historical connection with the ruling party, which was then, you know, the liberation movement. So they don't have that commitment and historical connection with the former liberation movement that is now the Frelimo party running the country since the country became independent. Mm-hmm. All they want to see is transparency, is accountability, is good governance of the country. They want basic services and so on. That's one major difference this time around.
Very interesting. You mentioned something very key. Whereas where in the past we've seen where, although contested, elections, the elites somehow find some way to compromise and, you know, keep the machinery of government rolling. But this particular election didn't turn out that way. And you've you mentioned two key points that I wanted to expatiate on. You mentioned the killing of, I guess, as the lawyer for one of the opposition parties. But you also mentioned the younger generation. But I wanted you to talk on the ruling party. Its presidential candidate itself was born after the independence. And then I'm just looking at what makes this different from past elections.
So really, you have to understand that the leaders of the opposition themselves are part of this younger generation. So it's not only the ruling party that has put forward a candidate that was born after independence. Mm-hmm. Most of these political opposition leaders are also part of this younger generation. And of course, they enjoy massive support from the population, especially the youth. Especially in major metropolitan areas, you know, such as Maputo, Beira, and Nampula. In fact, I would say Kilimani as well, in central Mozambique. So there's a massive support, and part of that support, I would say the conditions for that kind of support was created by Frelimo itself. Because Frelimo, for the past 30 years, have created conditions in which young people have become radicalized, you know. And often when we talk about radicalization, we think of somebody coming from a foreign country, a religious fanatic, you know, coming to spread heresy among young people. Mm-hmm. But in this case, the radicalization of young people was accomplished through the acts and omissions of the ruling party itself, Frelimo, by sucking the moisture from the ground and creating this, you know, field of straw and a tinderbox that only needed a little bit of spark to let, you know, on fire. So those are the conditions that have been created by Frelimo. So if you look at the economy, Mozambique is struggling very badly, especially since the discovery of those secret loans that were taken illegally without the knowledge of the parliament, without the knowledge of you know, the courts that should have approved those loans. Even the IMF and the World Bank did not know about those loans. They were hidden from them, you know. Mm-hmm. Donors in Mozambique did know about those loans, over $2 billion that That was around 2015, 2016. That's when all this information was coming out. And so there was this donor strike that suspended, you know, direct injection of aid into the Mozambican budget. And since then, the government has been struggling, you know, fiscally. You know, and, you know, the health system is in chaos. There are no medicines. You know, doctors have been striking and nurses have been striking, seeking more resources for the health sector. The education sector as well is struggling. You know, you can look at the deplorable conditions in the education system, the schools, especially in rural areas, the situation is chaotic, you know. The infrastructure is in terrible shape. You know, the bridges, the roads are in complete disrepair, you know. Unemployment is massive. So you have these young people graduating from the university, some of them graduating from high school, a large number of graduates without prospects for employment. So these are the conditions in which people are living. That's what is creating this problem. And this election, because the fraud was too much in your face, the ballot stuffing, even in front of international election monitors, you know, and that was, you know, one instance of power abuse too many that people did not, tolerate, that took people to the streets.
Yeah, before I come to the question I was going to ask, I wanted to clarify. So this secret loan, who is this donor, if it's not IMF and World Bank?
Yeah, so the donor, in fact, they were not donors. These are loans. The banks in Switzerland and in Russia, you know. You can check the details, you know, the information is all over the web. In fact, the former Minister of Finance who signed these loans is now in jail in the United States. He was arrested while traveling internationally in South Africa and was eventually extradited to the United States to be tried. He was tried and found guilty and sentenced to jail, to imprisonment. And there are many government officials who participated in the idealization and realization of these loans that are afraid to travel internationally because they don't know whether their names are on the list of the wanted, you know, by the international authorities, especially the United States. That's where the loans came from. The argument was that these loans would be invested in fishing for revenues for the state and defense, but in the end, a lot of this money did not even come to the country. It went into the pockets of these officials and bribes to other people who are not even based in Mozambique. So if you look at what has been done with the money, with the funds, these loans, you will not see any evidence in Mozambique. There's nothing to show for these funds, but they have created a massive hole in the Mozambican economy.
Then we can see clearly why there would be such challenge to Frelimo party. But even as that, we've seen also that I think the Frelimo party, its candidate won over about 70%, according to the result that I presented. But we've also seen that a lot of the observers, including the EU, including the EU observers, and, you know, maybe local observers, find there to be discrepancies, you know, voter intimidation or, you know, whatever with the ballot boxes. But despite all of this, we've seen some countries like China and South Africa recognizing or congratulating Daniel Chapel and accepting that result. What implication does this have, or what motivation, first of all, is behind Chinese and South Africa's recognition, and what is the implication of that?
Well, you know, one thing to be aware of is that the Chinese Communist Party, Frelimo, ANC, ZANU-PF in Zimbabwe, in Southern Africa, you know, even MPLA in Angola, who have also congratulated Chapo, you know, are part of these liberation movements. They are friends, they are comrades, you know. And so it's just friends congratulating each other, covering for each other, and justifying, you know, each other's misdoings in the region. That's what's happening. These are just, you know, comrades in business looking after one another. Yeah, that's what's happening. Now, in addition to that, I would say that even, you know, the other part of the international community that has made statements to the effect that there've been, you know, fraudulent practices during this election, I would say, you know, their tone is measured.
Yeah.
They've been very diplomatic because, you know, these are people representing governments that have relationships with the Frelimo government. So they cannot come out, you know, with guns blazing and using extremely critical language against Frelimo, because let's say Frelimo eventually, you know, manages to continue in power, then they will have problems with Frelimo. So they are measured. They are not speaking, you know, openly critically about, you know, the situation that we've seen there. And for all of these, no matter what happens, they continue to benefit from the extraction of resources and other economic interests in Mozambique. So really, at the end of the day, whether the Mozambican people suffer or not, it's not a big deal, as long as they continue to advance their economic interests in Mozambique.
I'll come back to the international one. But you mentioned something about, I'm guessing that these are Western nations that have business economic interest in Mozambique, and you know, even though they acknowledge that there are some, you know, fraudulent activities, like Riley said, they've been measured. But I'll come back to that. You said something like, you know, some of the motivations behind it is, you know, Frelimo may end up, or John Chapo may, Daniel Chapo may end up retaining that position. So, but this is ongoing. The you know, the opposition, Venancio Mondlane had called for, I think in maybe 2 days ago, has called for some kind of like 3 days protest and whatnot. What do you think is going to be the outcome of this? Do you think it's going to alter any of this change, or you think the status quo is going to be maintained?
It's difficult to say, but it's also going to be very difficult going forward for Frelimo to maintain the status quo. Because, you know, young people now, you know, this generation is not afraid to express their voices openly, vociferously. And you also have a young generation of opposition leadership that is not afraid to demand transparency, justice, human rights, and the rule of law. You know, it's going to be very difficult. I don't see the same level of compromise that I saw in the past elections. This is much more you know, difficult for Frelimo, because even within the Frelimo party itself, there isn't unity. There are those who feel that, you know, a group of organized crime, mafia, have taken over the party and they have marginalized genuine leaders of Frelimo, the classic leaders of Frelimo, who gave their youth to liberate the country with these high moral ideals of the liberation struggle. And they've seen that, flashed to the wayside. So there isn't, an evenly distributed level of satisfaction within Frelimo. Now you have security forces that are also not unified, so to speak. For example, elements from the army have been complaining about late salaries, underpayment, or owed, salaries. So, and tough working conditions that are not conducive for them. So you have, different groups within society, whether you look at it from, the, civilian side of things, from the political side of things, or from the security forces side of things, that there's a massive level of dissatisfaction that is going on, and Frelimo is going to find it very difficult to manage that.
I agree with you. We've seen also, if I look at one of the things you're pointing out that we see across Africa, we've seen that there's this old guard versus the newer generation. That, okay, we've seen in South Africa with ANC losing some its majority power in South Africa. We've seen also in Kenya, we've seen where the youth, during the summer, the youth protests against the finance bill tax that was put on the. We've seen in Senegal as well. We saw with the coming of the president and how, the challenge of the old guard. So we're seeing this. So I do see some kind of evolution happening. Do you predict this to be, is this like an indication of war, future democracy or democratic future in Africa? Does it indicate to us that there's some positive transition or trajectory towards that goal? Does it raise hope for Africa's democracy?
I would say the fact that Africa is described, and rightly so, as a young continent in terms of demographics, the youthfulness of the population, overwhelmingly youthful, can be an opportunity, but can also be a problem, depending on how the continent is governed. So you have governments that look at the youth as a threat to peace and stability. But the youth can also be viewed as an opportunity, depending on the approach to governance that you take, And we are beginning to see, we'll see more and more young people becoming increasingly restless and demand more change. And that is how it should be. In fact, the people that we're talking about now, this older generation of leaders, and when they became involved in politics to liberate all these countries, were young people themselves, like these ones. They have done their work, they've liberated the countries. Now it's time for them to open up the space for a new generation of leadership from the youth to take over, the destinies of these countries. We'll see more and more of that. They have lived their lives, but they want to continue to cling on to power, But then you have these young people who still have long lives to live, and they see those lives and futures jeopardized by, the old political elites, that are keeping themselves in power artificially. They have no ideas anymore on how to govern, and that is evident in the state and the conditions in which these countries are. So one last thing that I would add is that in Mozambique, you have a very strong civil society that has filled the void for a long time, when that has added its weight to the to the opposition, and it's also supported by the youth. So we are going to see more and more of that, not less.
Okay, that is good to hear. Speaking of that, you mentioned the opportunities as well as the maybe challenges or somehow the threats that the youth might pose. So you talked about massive unemployment among the youth, and you talked about the disparity. There's also disparity in the south and north of Mozambique. So look at the Cabo Delgado area where you've had insurgency. So what do you think this current unrest? Do you think the insurgents might capitalize on this unrest?
Probably they're already doing it, I mean, for them, from their standpoint, this is an opportunity because the unrest in the rest of the country takes the government's attention away from Cabo Delgado to the rest of the country. So you saw all the military resources that have been allocated and displayed, all the military might that was displayed in Maputo and being used to violently repress the protests. Those are the resources that should be allocated in Cabo Delgado to defend populations there, to defend the right to life of people in Cabo Delgado. So definitely, this is a great deal of advantage for insurgents up in Cabo Delgado. And mind you, a lot of those insurgents are young people recruited from local communities. They are disenfranchised, uneducated, undereducated. They see their lands taken away from them, most of the time without free, prior, and informed consent, no compensation. And, these lands given to multinational corporations that mine and extract resources without leaving anything back. So the coming of these multinational corporations for mining and extraction of oil and gas did not improve the local social and economic conditions of the people. On the contrary, they have worsened the living conditions for the people, because those sources of livelihood, of meaningful life, have been yanked away from them. How, these insurgents have been successful in recruiting in Cabo Delgado, even Nampula.
We've seen, I want to link this to what was happening in the Sahel in the last couple of years, where there's been a strong anti-Western and anti-French narrative, where military rulers have capitalized on and come to establish power in there. So in Mozambique, I think we saw with the insurgents and saw with SADC and Rwanda coming to intervene and also to raise the capacity of the Mozambique army. So do you think, I guess the question is, do you think the army, I don't know how strong the Mozambique army is. Do you think this might be something that they could capitalize on to want to take, intervene in power?
Well, so if you have a section of the military presenting their grievances, sometimes even publicly, complaining that they do not have the right equipment, that their working conditions are not ideal, there's a lot to be desired on that front, that tells you that the Mozambican army is in a bad shape right now, because the Mozambican government has failed to invest in institutions, in infrastructure, has failed to invest on the country across the board, including the security forces. Lack of investment, not necessarily in terms of buying security equipment, but in terms of investing in the security forces personnel, in the people, the right skills, you know, the right education, you know, the right incentives, you know, and benefits and so on. They've neglected to do that. There's a massive divide between the ruling elite and the infantry, for instance, you know, and they've been exposed. You know, those weaknesses were exposed in Cap Delgado. They continue to be exposed. So, you know, from a strategic point of view, that's a weakness that is being exploited. It's there. The insurgents know it. You know, it's an unfortunate situation, but this is where Mozambique is at the moment.
You did mention, I'm going to ask two last questions, but let me first ask this one. I wanted to expatiate on the external interests in Mozambique. Because we've had one episode where we delve deep into the insurgents in Mozambique, and the guest mentioned the level of investment, you know, like what you mentioned, the mining, the oil and gas in this, and the economic interest in this place. So I wanted you to expatiate on that and what impact that has had in the current situation in Mozambique, in terms of, like, if you, I know you've touched upon it, but if you could just delve a little bit more into and look at the distribution of these investments in the south and north of Mozambique.
Yeah, so a lot of these resources are structured in central and northern Mozambique, you know. So you have Tete province, for instance. Tete province is supposed to be the capital powerhouse of energy in southern Africa, because it supplies electricity to Mozambique. It supplies electricity to South Africa and to some parts of Zimbabwe and Zambia, right? That's hydropower generated on the Zambezi River in Tete province. And in addition to that, Tete province, almost the entire province is sitting on these massive resources of coal, you know? And you have a lot of these multinational corporations mining coal there. In order to do that, they have removed people from their lands, and they've used intimidation, misinformation, threats, you know, to forcibly remove people from their lands to make room for these mining operations. And there's a great deal of dissatisfaction there. So in some places, if you go to Tete, because there's this open pit mining, you will see a lot of air pollution. Pollution of the atmosphere, of air, of the soils, of food sources, you know, which brings, you know, a lot of diseases to people. Now, it's an energy powerhouse, but a lot of people in Tete have no access to that energy. They have no electricity, they have no light, you know, they live in abject poverty. That's a microcosm of what's happening throughout Mozambique in terms of the people's relationship to these multinational corporations that are extracting resources, and the relationship that these people have with their own government, as well as the relationship between the multinational corporations and the governments that often work together to give people a raw deal at the end of the day. That's what's happening throughout the country. And no wonder you have this dissatisfaction both in the big cities and in rural areas.
Very interesting. We've seen similar stuff. It's everywhere. We've seen in DRC where we look at the green energy and where people have been displaced from their lands, like Chinese people, like literally evicted from their lands, and you know, to make room, like Raleigh said, for this and create all of this internal displacement and also even migration issues. So I wanted to look at how the connections between these issues and the issues that Africa faces, and how, again, I wanted to conclude with looking at election, because I've been kind of interested in elections in Africa, as electoral democracy in Africa, if that is the way forward, if we should all also be looking at another way that we can elect governments, elect leaders, and tie that into what you see moving forward with the Mozambique case. Do you see, like, if we're going to project what's going to happen, do you project that Chapo is going to retain power? If Chapo retains power, how do you think, what's going to happen? I know you've mentioned that even if they retain power, you know, there's been a structural challenge to them. It can't be business as usual. So if he retains power, what's going to happen in the next 4 years with the Frelimo party? So if this doesn't happen, if they have to, you know, maybe do a fresh election or whatever it is they have to do, what do you project moving forward? I think that's just the question. If I give you a broad whatever to just conclude on.
If Frelimo retains power with Chapo as president, he must demonstrate that he's very distinct from the older generation that he's replacing. He must make sure that his government is inclusive. Inclusive in terms of investing in education for young people, right education, investing in the healthcare system, rebuild, you know, the infrastructure, the roads and the bridges, because those are the things that enable people to be, you know, creative, to work and sell their goods, you know, in the market. He has to reform the public service so that it's no longer, you know, the property of Frelimo party, but, you know, bring devolution off the state to the people and appoint people to leadership positions, including, you know, senior public positions on the basis of merit, on the basis of ability. He must demonstrate that he's very serious in fighting corruption. There's massive corruption in Mozambique. He has to demonstrate with clear evidence, with actions, that he's going to deal with that. He also must demonstrate that he really cares about, you know, civil servants. They have been complaining about their pay, their living conditions. There must be massive reforms everywhere in the country, you know. And when it comes to the extraction of resources, he must make sure that those resources, where they are extracted, the people in those lands, in those communities, actually can see a direct benefit from those mining activities. Otherwise, we will continue to have a very serious problem and they will face resistance. And I would not be surprised if we have another armed insurrection in Mozambique. The dissatisfaction is massive. It can't be business as usual.
Very interesting. Well, thank you, Dr. Maxine, for this useful insight. We can only hope for the best. And, you know, in the midst of the bleak situation, you know, there are some gleam of hope that we can see. And you know, we can also look at the bright side of things and see that there is some level of consciousness, political consciousness, especially among the teeming youth population in Mozambique, as well in Africa as well. So we can only hope that this can be harnessed properly for the good of the people. Well, thank you very much for honoring our invitation, and thank you. I've
my pleasure.
Very great. Great evening. Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in today. Join me as usual to thank Dr. David Matsini in providing this very deep and rich insight into the post-election crisis in Mozambique. As usual, I encourage you to join me again next week for another exciting episode. For now, stay blessed, and I'll see you.